Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our freelance journalist, Jimmy Israel. He's with us from Cleveland. In New York City, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. R. Clark Cooper joins us once again in Washington, D.C. He is the executive director of the Log Cabin Republicans. That is a Republican group that advocates for LGBT issues within the Republican Party. He's also an Army Reserve captain. And in our D.C. studio, also with us, Cenk Uygur. He is the host of The Young Turks with Cenk Uygur on Current TV. And he's in town for the White House Correspondents' Dinner this weekend, and he was nice enough to stop by. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Howdy.
Great. Yo.
Okay, first time in. Cenk, my dude, what's up, man? Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate it. It's lovely in here.
I know. He's making fun of the fact that our studio is fabulous, but he's basically hating already. That's it. That's kind of where it is.
Exact opposite. I'm loving it. I want to hang out on that couch all day.
Okay.
All right, tell everybody.
Yeah, that's
let's jump in, okay? You know, as you talked about earlier, Michelle, it's been 20 years since riots in Los Angeles following the acquittal of four officers and the 1991 beating of motorist Rodney King. Now, King himself told people to stop the violence. Michelle, we got some tape of that, yeah?
Yeah, we do. We do. And if you missed any of our conversation with Rodney King, you can feel free to check in on that and go to our webpage, go to npr.org, click on the programs tab, and then on Tell Me More. But these are some of the comments King made at the press conference after the riots started. Here it is.
We've got to quit. We've got to quit. You know, after all, I mean, I can understand the first upset for the first 2 hours after the verdict. But to keep going on like this and to see the security guard shot on the ground, it's just not right.
Wow. The emotion in his voice is just moving.
It really is.
Thanks, mm-hmm. Michelle. Now, we've certainly come a long way with people calling for cool heads around the Trayvon Martin case. People have marched peacefully and rallied around the family. Now, it's different because we don't have a verdict yet, so we don't have any way of knowing how or if moods will change. But, fellas, do we have something to compare and contrast here? What do you guys think all this says about where we stand on race today? Cenk Uygur, now you lived in L.A. for the past decade. What's the vibe in the city like now?
Well, L.A. is an amazing city that's so multicultural, you know, and it goes on. Anybody who's been there knows for miles and miles it's the endless city. And then you go through Armenian territory, then Thai, then Mexican, then Chinese. It's an amazing place. So the vibe in the city in L.A. is pretty good. But, you know, when I see stories like the Trayvon Martin story, I'm shocked by, if you will, the vibe in other places. And, you know, to me, I thought it was a clear case of discrimination when they didn't arrest George Zimmerman. And, you know, I know a lot of people get emotional about that. We've been covering it from day one. And people say, oh, you know, you're making assumptions. I mean, give me a break. If it was, you know, reverse the races, and there's no way in the world that they don't arrest that guy on the spot. Mm. There just isn't.
Mm. All right. Well, Pablo Torre, you were very young during the riots. Do they mean anything to your generation now?
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of losing all editorial authority, I was in first grade, I think, when it happened. And I think, honestly, I mean, at that point, that was at the nexus when memories sort of get vivid. And I think for my generation, I don't think it's as vivid as, say, the Oklahoma City bombing, certainly 9/11. I think the Rodney King riots are a cultural reference point for a lot of young people, but I think every new generation, you know, the further you get away from it, the less real it seems. And I don't think it has that kind of palpable, emotional, sensory salience that some of the other historical events have had that are not about race. And so, you know, every reminder about what happened, I mean, basically as soon as you read about it, you're kind of jolted awake, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's troubling.
R. Clark Cooper, Captain Coop, what do you think?
Well, we're making strides in the right direction, but the truth is we're not in a post-racial society. I mean, this is if we go back to the whole precepts of liberty and justice for all, that's what we're striving for and we continue to strive for. But in a day and age where there are some in some communities who do judge one by the color of their skin, their ethnicity, their sex, sometimes their sexual orientation, you know, those are still issues in where we're at. I mean, we've obviously had some major accomplishments in addition to those hurdles. I mean, we're in a post segregation society. Things are more integrated. I was born in the 1970s, so, you know, I do remember what happened in Los Angeles, but I also can recall when I was in university that integrated student activities were still unique. This is the 1990s. So, you know, we're moving in the right trajectory, but we're certainly not in what some would call a post-racial society because, look, you know, if one has to caveat or parse their critique of President Obama's performance or lack thereof, that is an indicator of that we're still worried or focused about one's race. Because if we're looking at someone's merit or capability, race should never play in factor, good or bad.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because in the new Rolling Stone that hits newsstands soon, Obama talks about, he pushes back on that whole idea of his presidency signifying some kind of post-racial America. Cenk Uygur, this is something you've talked about on your show, The Young Turks, on Current TV. What does, okay, I got a question for you because I sincerely want to know this. I mean, what does post-racial even mean? And you'll let me know when we get there, right?
Yeah, I will, actually. We'll break that
good,
news.
Good, good. Yeah, email me or text.
No, we'll break the news on the Young Turks. We will.
Sweet.
we do official declarations every once in a while.
Okay.
So just give us a couple of decades, and it's right around the corner. Look, you know, this is what drives me crazy. People like Dr. Laura say, oh, come on, you already have a black president. Get that chip off your shoulder already. Yeah, but it's not about that, man. I mean, we cover story after story. We just did one on how waiters admit that they discriminate against black clients because they think they're going to get a lower tip, so they treat them badly. And then they get a lower tip because they treat them
right.
badly.
Okay? Imagine that. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, and then there's the white hand, black hand trying to sell an iPod on eBay, that study. There's the resume study. So I think what happens is that a lot of white Americans, when you talk about these issues, they take it personally. Like, they think you're accusing them of being racist. And I think that's what really hurts this issue. And what I want to try to explain to people is, look, just understand people's perspective. And the perspective they have might not be the one that you have. So they might have had trouble getting that job because of their name on their resume. They might have had trouble with the police that you didn't have. So can you walk in their shoes for a second and begin to understand those issues? And I think that helps us hopefully push in the right direction.
But can I just – I want to talk about that a little bit, Cenk, the feedback loop that you're talking about and how much you talk about it then becomes part of the feedback loop. We were going to talk about this later, but I want to sort of talk about this now. This whole thing about we're in D.C., so the Capitals, right,
yeah,
has been one of these stories. They're kind of like our White Sox, you know, you know what I mean? We're kind of perpetually in contention, can't get over the line. So the Washington Capitals beat the Boston Bruins in game 7 of the playoff series in hockey this week. I'll just play a short clip for people who missed it.
Back to the line, knocked down. Knuble to the line with Ward. Knuble cuts in.
So, of course, the Bruins, perennial powerhouse in hockey, right? And Joel Ward is African-American. And so so this is a big deal in Washington because everybody's all excited about the Caps. And then some of the sports writers start pointing out that Twitter erupted after the game with these racially charged posts. And we can't – I mean, I can't part my lips to even say a lot of these things, but I'll just give you a mild example. Go play basketball. Hockey is a white sport. People threatening to kill him. And all this. So Pablo, mm-hmm, some people are saying, you know, people are saying, well, gee, what's going on here? I mean, does this league have a problem with diversity? So what do you think?
Well, I think hockey, I guess, is by consensus probably the most quote unquote white mainstream sport. I mean, of the big four leagues. So there's that element to it. Boston, obviously, you talk about the Red Sox being the last MLB team to integrate. You talk about Bill Russell, arguably the greatest NBA player ever, the winningest player ever. So he's spoken about facing bigotry while playing for the Celtics, vandalism in his home, racial epithets, all of that. But to me, you know, this is almost as much a story about social media and the outlet it gives insane, bigoted fans as well as everybody else. You know, you look at Twitter during any big event. Sports, certainly. It happened during the Linsanity period, RIP. All of these big topics. and you find the darkest corner of the world. I mean, if you want to go to the most dank, depressing place in the universe, go to a comment section on a YouTube video. And it could be any YouTube video. I mean, as long as you get a critical mass of people, there's this notion where social media is this place where you can cathartically vent and enjoy generally being horrible. And this is true for racist sports fans especially.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly Barbershop Roundtable. We're joined by Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. That's who was talking just now. Also with us, journalist Jimmy Israel, Army Reserve Captain R. Clark Cooper. He's also the executive director of Log Cabin Republicans. And Cenk Uygur, he is the host of The Young Turks with Cenk Uygur on Current TV. Cenk, you were saying that this kind of even talking about it maybe gives it air, which is a little bit different from what you were saying earlier. See, there, I'm always sort of confused about this. You know, should we talk about it or should we not talk about it? I mean, if I were the target of this business, right, I don't know what I would want. Would I want people to talk about it to say, yeah, this is wrong? Or do you want people to not talk about it?
Right. So this, I have mixed feelings about this one. So on the one hand, Pablo's right that, you know, the online gives anonymity to people, and hence you get to see the dark corners of their soul. Right. Because once they have that anonymity, they're like, OK, now let me tell you what I've been thinking. Right. Mm-hmm. And that they wouldn't have free rein to do in public. On the other hand, it's so prevalent online that I feel like, yeah, they attacked him based on his identity. To me, working online for as long as we have, I think, of course, that's of course what they're going to do, because they're right, trying to attack him, right? So for me, for example, and I've got this literally probably a million times, you're fat, you're Middle Eastern, you're Muslim, you're this, you're that, you sweat, whatever, right? And I'm like, so if I talked about that on any given day, you can go, you know, as Pablo was saying, go on any of our YouTube videos and you'll see that, right? So I could talk about it every day.
You're not fat. Let me just say this. But Clark, what do you think? Because, you know, it's not like LGBT folks and activists are immune to this kind
no,
of thing.
It's any YouTube site, any website, any article online with a comment section, anything mm-hmm. with a comment section where you have this anonymity out there on the online community.
But why is it that these people don't use their anonymity to spout poetry?
Well,
okay, what is up with that?
Well,
I mean, and I find women particularly, I have to say it, I'm the only woman in the shop today. Well, I'm always the only woman in the shop. But I'm just saying women, I seem to be, to come in for a lot of kind of vicious, sexually charged comments, no matter what they're talking about, no matter what their political persuasion
is. Well, here's an interesting piece we haven't discussed about that, about this anonymity, is that people are selecting to speak or voice opinions that they know probably are counter to general social mores or what general society sees as acceptable. And we saw evidence of that with the attacks on Joel Ward. There are all of a sudden some Twitter accounts are starting to disappear. Some of these tweets are starting to be deleted. So on a positive side, as bad and as egregious and as horrible as those tweets were or messages that showed up, is that there was a realization with, oh, wow, I'm in trouble here. I may lose my job. I could lose status with my neighbors or with family and friends, because if they found out I said those things, they are wrong. So as bad as they were, there's at least a recognition of this is counter to where our society is striving to be.
Jimmy, you want a final thought on that?
What's interesting to me is how young these people are. And, you know, I see these comments, and I've gotten a few of them, you know, because I write for the internets every now and again. And, you know, I kind of brush it off my shoulder, because, you know, racism, the N-bomb is like breakdancing or skateboarding for a lot of these young white kids. It's just the new hip thing to do to get attention. And next year it'll be something else. It'll be guyliner. You know, so I don't put a whole lot of stock into it.
That's,
you know, it's just something to do to get attention. If you drop the N-bomb, then maybe your Twitter account will appear, you know, in a news article about it. You
interesting.
Know,
it's transgressive and attention getting in a way that something else would have been. Interesting. Before we let you go, Clark, I have to ask you about this. You were talking about how people need to learn. Sometimes people learn the hard way that Facebook, what starts on Facebook doesn't stay on Facebook. Well, Marine Sergeant Gary Stein is set to receive an other than honorable discharge for Facebook post about President Obama. One of his posts was, "I will not follow all orders from him." You know, Clark, you're the only active duty person here, or reserve.
Well, this is really easy here. I mean, this guy signed a contract. This Marine signed a contract, and the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the UCMJ, is very clear about what you can and can't do. Obviously, all Americans, including military personnel, have First Amendment rights. You have that freedom of speech. You have opinion. You can vote. You can actually participate in the political process within those parameters set out in the UCMJ. And unfortunately, this Marine violated that. He signed a contract. He can't claim he did not know. But contemptuous language or behavior that would be seen as egregiously attacking senior officers, senior officials, if you're a subordinate, especially the commander-in-chief, is a no-go zone. And that's what he did. He went beyond general discourse. He went beyond the pale. And this is why it took a Marine panel to make that ruling.
We have to leave it there for now. Maybe next week we'll talk about how the NFL draft played out. Thank you all. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and presidential fellow at Case Western Reserve University. He was with us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Pablo Torre, reporter for Sports Illustrated, with us from NPR Studios in New York. R. Clark Cooper is a captain in the Army Reserve. He's also the executive director of the Log Cabin Republicans. And with us for the first time, we hope not the last, Cenk Uygur is the host of The Young Turks with Cenk Uygur on Current TV. They were here in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep, yep.
Cool.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.